International.
Ici Radio-Canada. This is Canada.
This is Radio Nederland, the Dutch World Broadcasting System in Hilversum, Holland.
You're tuned to Swiss Radio International in Bern.
This is Free China as a presentation of the Voice of Free China, the international service of the Broadcasting Corporation of China.
This is Radio Havana, Cuba.
Broadcasting from Cuba, free territory in the Americas.
This is Radio South Africa.
This is Yugoslavia Radio Belgrade calling.
This is Israel broadcasting from Jerusalem.
This is Radio Pyongyang of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea.
This is the General Overseas Service of the BBC.
Hello, I'm Keith Powell, and welcome to Media Network Plus here on PCJ Radio International. First, I'd like to apologize to listeners of the program on the World Radio Network. As you may have gathered, last week it wasn't a new show, but in fact a repeat of a previous program. This was due to a power outage that we had just before the program was being transmitted. But if you would like to listen to it, you can visit our website, www.pcjmedia.com, and you'll find the program there under Media Network Plus, along with other past editions as well. Now, for the past almost 2 months now, many shortwave listeners and DXers have been focused on Radio Australia. As you're probably aware, Radio Australia and the ABC ceased all shortwave broadcasts on the 31st of January. Now, there's been a lot of, well, misinformation that's actually been going on around it. Something, of course, that we always hear every time an international broadcaster goes off shortwave is about the millions and millions of people that are listening. Now, of course, there may be a large number of people that listen to broadcast stations like, let's say, the BBC World Service, Deutsche Welle, Radio France International, and the Voice of America. But if you look at their shortwave schedules, they're really targeting areas where technology hasn't really made the leap forward. Now, when Radio Australia and the ABC announced that they were going to cut this, a lot of people said, well, what's going to happen in the Pacific? People don't have access to the new technologies. And many of them were saying that predominantly because they were going by information 5 years ago. Now, 5 years ago, if you'd asked me, should they cut shortwave to the Pacific, I would have said no. But a lot has changed in the last 5 years. But yet at the same time, there are some people out there who continue to go by old information and not the most recent information, which of course the ABC had been working on for quite some time. Now, ABC Rural, which is the rural network of the ABC, interviewed Gary Kratt. He's from Texan Radio Australia. Now, Texan, of course, is a brand name that you're probably familiar with, but Texan Radio Australia has nothing to do with Texan Radio. He just actually happens to call the company Texan Radio Australia because he sells Texan radios. Now, he said some very interesting things when he was being interviewed by the ABC, which, well, were very suspicious.
Carl, already we've had a lot of comments, adverse comments, I might say, from graziers, people who are stockmen in the Northern Territory, people in yachts, and the vast majority of adverse comments have come from people in Pacific Islands. So that means New Guinea, Solomon Islands, Marshall Islands, and even New Zealand.
Does that surprise you, the feedback you've had?
No, it doesn't really. We've for a long time published a radio guide containing Radio Australia frequencies and ABC domestic frequencies, and people have come to know about these broadcasts and come to rely on them. So no, it doesn't surprise me at all.
It's probably going a little bit into your business here, Gary, but what sort of quantities of shortwave radios would you actually sell?
We sell thousands of them, but I wouldn't suggest that every customer is affected or will be affected by these cutbacks. But I think it's true to say there are several thousand in the Pacific that would be listening to Radio Australia on a daily basis. And, of course, then there's all those people in yachts, and they're a kind of itinerant listening group, and the stockmen as well. So I'd say there's at least 5,000.
And you're still getting orders from the Pacific?
Oh, yeah, we get them every day, yep. We recently shipped an order for 500 shortwave radios into the Solomon Islands, and they were going to be distributed to outlying villages so they could pick up shortwave broadcast. I mean, the Solomon Islands do have a fairly unreliable domestic shortwave service themselves, but most people listen to Radio Australia. The people that buy them in Australia are travellers who are travelling in Northern Territory in Western Australia and would be out of range of a normal AM station. The ABC have domestic shortwave broadcasts coming out of Katherine and Tennant Creek that cover the Northern Territory and Western Australia very well. And so there are lots of grey nomads that would listen to that and use that as a source of news and weather information.
Now, there were two things in that excerpt of that interview that he did with the ABC that I thought was a little bit peculiar. First of all, he said that he heard from all these people. Well, why is it that the ABC didn't? Why is it that Radio Australia didn't? The next thing, he talks about the quote-unquote 500 radios that were sent to Solomon Islands. Now, when he said that, it got me thinking. I seem to have remembered a story that was on the Media Network blog at Radio Nederland about this. Now, luckily, I have the complete archive of all the Media Network content that was on the website that was taken care of by Andy Sennett. And sure enough, they did. Yes, there were 500 radios that were sent to Solomon Islands. That was in 2011, so not exactly recent. Now, throughout the Pacific, while it is true that the internet has lagged behind, in the last 2 years, the internet has seen a big boom with technology companies investing a lot of money to build an infrastructure. Now, it's not internet via landline, but rather internet by mobile. The first time I went to PNG, if I wanted to rent or even buy a mobile phone, it was extremely expensive, which, of course, meant that I just didn't use mine for long periods of time. But the prices have dropped dramatically. I mean, you can pick up a smartphone from a company like Huawei, which is a Chinese company, in, say, Papua New Guinea or Fiji or even Solomon Islands, for between $15 and $25. And the data packages as well are also incredibly inexpensive. So if you go anywhere, especially in Port Moresby in Papua New Guinea or in Fiji, in any of the stores, the last time I was there, which was only this past summer, you know, I didn't see one shortwave radio. But I did see a lot of people, not just in the cities, but also in the countryside, receiving content through mobile devices. They're also putting up a number of towers as well to have better coverage. Now, some people would say, well, what about electricity? Ah, you see, they're very smart. Because in outlying areas, say outside Port Moresby, where they do have from time to time electrical problems because of weather conditions like cyclones, many of the cell towers are, well, they work off the main power grid, but they also have a solar battery backup. So, in fact, they actually never go off. And if they do go off, maybe it's only for like a couple of minutes before the switchover is done. So, that's the first thing. A lot of people then were saying that in the Northern Territories, where people were listening to ABC radio, what's going to happen to all the, well, thousands and thousands of people that were listening? Well, oddly enough, the ABC only received around 15. Yes, that's right, 15. From an internal memo that the ABC sent me when they were starting to study the continuation of shortwave, if at all possible, or to discontinue it, which they've been doing for months, when they announced that they were going to discontinue it in December, they had such a small response, around 15 people. But yet, Gary Crate from Texan Radio Australia has been getting many more. That's a little bit strange to me. But anyway, the ABC Managing Director, Michelle Guthrie, told a Senate commission that she estimates that she is confident the organization has not breached its charter by canceling its shortwave services. Here is the exchange that took place just a few days ago.
So when you say extensive research was undertaken by ABC Radio, I'd like to understand what research was done internally to assess the utility of shortwave radio, what technological solution was going to replace the withdrawal of that particular service to those communities in the Northern Territory.
Senator, can I highlight to you that since we made the announcement to date, we've been contacted by fewer than, I think it's around 15 people from the Northern Territory.
Yeah, happy to go to that, Ms Guthrie,
and,
but
and
I'm interested.
And 6 people from the Northern Territory.
So, Mr Spiegelman and his board, your board, you have given evidence to this committee, made a decision based on research undertaken by the ABC.
Yes.
I am now asking you, you've told me you did a survey, you've told me you've had a look a bit of what audiences are thinking, but you haven't actually taken me to the research that identifies the technological solution for those communities, for the cattlemen, for the fishers, for the tourists in the Northern Territory that will solve them being able to access ABC radio.
Senator McKenzie, you need to... I need to make clear, I guess, that there are a number of duplicative services provided into the Northern Territory. One of those was shortwave, one of those is VAST, and one of those is FM transmitters. Now, VAST actually covers 100% of the area, and we have identified that there are more than 22,000 active VAST decoders in the Northern Territory, which equates to over a quarter of all Northern Territory households. And these households are primarily outside AM, FM and terrestrial TV coverage. But frankly, the low number of complaints that we've had from listeners, and we, highlights, the previous research, which was shortwave is used by very few people as their primary means for listening to radio.
This is the consultation that you're calling after the fact, Ms Guthrie. You see, in a conversation that I had prior to it...
Impact in the Northern Territory, and the impact that we have seen over the last 3 months has been very clear by the number of people that have contacted us.
But clearly the concerns of stakeholders like the Cattlemen's Association, like the fisheries, like the Northern Territory Government and the Chief Minister, like Indigenous organisations in remote regional areas of the Northern Territory, clearly don't stack up in terms of the concerns that have been raised to the ABC. Is that correct?
Senator, I will say to you that, since the announcement has been made at the beginning of December, we have been contacted by around 15 people.
Have
and
you
most
been
of the concerns...
Sorry?
Senator McKenzie...
Yes, I have been
Senator
to the Northern
McKenzie.
Territory,
Senator.
If the decision was made the first week of December, when did the ABC consult, as it says, in the Northern Territory?
Well, following the decision, we very much reached out to our listeners and they were provided with notice of the change.
So you consulted after you made the decision?
In addition, we did consult with particular stakeholders before the decision was made.
So who were they, Ms Guthrie?
I'll have to take that on notice, Senator.
So much has changed in the last few years. I mean, if you look at your departing international chief, Lindley Marshall, he reported just 3 years ago that older shortwave technology was still relevant in the Pacific in particular, and I quote, "You'd have to see a significant take-up of other devices to warrant moving away from shortwave." So you're saying it's dramatically changed in these countries?
Yes. It has.
And she's absolutely correct. The advent of new technologies in the Pacific has changed dramatically. Now, as of course this story develops, we will bring you the latest on it. But we're going to stay actually on communication news from the Pacific region. A Singapore-based satellite operator has put an order for a new satellite which aims to bring high-speed broadband to unserviced and remote areas of the Pacific and Southeast Asia. Already, governments and telecommunications providers in 3 South Asian countries and 11 Pacific countries have signed up for Carax services, which are scheduled to come online in 2019. The chief executive, Christian Paterol, spoke to Karori Hawkins, who began by asking about the viability of running a satellite service, which is such a huge footprint in the Pacific.
The reason why footprint was an issue is because it was not necessarily economical to put an entire satellite over the Pacific. The So you'd have to put a satellite that would look at the Pacific region, put capacity, most of its capacity on the Pacific region. And as you know, the Pacific region is not the most populous place. So it may be difficult to find a market for an entire satellite there. What we did is that we have a satellite that will straddle Southeast Asia and the Pacific in order to bring, to build a critical mass to justify the purchase of an entire satellite. So if you want, the Pacific in this case benefits from the fact that we found enough market in Southeast Asia to also serve the Pacific. Not only that, but our satellite is only about half a satellite. The other half is used by the Japanese corporation SkyPerfect JSAT. So in that sense, we didn't have to put all the money to buy an entire satellite, but about half of that.
And the figures are quite steep. Maybe if you can just run us through how much it's going to cost and maybe how long?
To build the satellite and to launch it, to insure it, to put all the ground system and so on, and only for our about half of us, of the satellite, it's costing $147 million that we have raised over the last 3.5 years that our project has been in the making. In order to raise this money, we had to show the finance industry that we had revenues that were already secured. And to do this, we signed up all the contracts that I mentioned already with 15 different customers. And that amounts for a total revenue of $434 million of secured revenues. Now, in terms of timeline, a satellite will have to live in space for at least 15 years. In our case, the Boeing satellite is actually planned to live longer than that. But to live that long alone in space, you have to take it, take all the steps necessary during the construction. So it will take 2.5 years to build it, to test it, to make sure that the satellite is robust and has all the units and redundancy on board to deliver the remarkable service that it will deliver in the Pacific.
The battle over the provision of internet services has flared up again in Niue. Privately owned Rocket Systems was shut down by the Niue government in April last year because the company had started charging for service that it was previously providing free. After an outcry, the company was allowed to restore services and negotiate to resolve matters the government took issue with. That has been the situation until this week, when Niue Broadcasting was ordered to remove two Rocket System antennas sited on the broadcaster's towers. Rocket Simene Liu told Don Wiseman that if this order goes ahead, its impact will be profound.
It will just cut off 3/4 of our users, which is basically 3/4 of the whole island. There'll only be 3 sites available to some of the users, but the rest of them, they will all go offline.
Now, the government had tried to shut you down nearly a year ago, and then there was an outcry and negotiations, and they were to go on for a month, and that was extended to another month, and then it was left open indefinitely. So what's brought it to this point?
There really hasn't been any resolution to that fiasco that happened last year. So basically, they still don't see our services as of value because we can't operate on the same space. There's 2 providers with limited users. Economically, it can't happen. So one has to go, or both will be reduced to a bare minimum, I guess, and our services are the cheaper of the two.
The Niue government has made no secret of the fact that they don't want a rival for their publicly owned internet provider, and they've been trying to get rid of you for a fair while, haven't they? But
yes.
No one on the island connected with the government seems to be able to tell us precisely what's going on. I've spoken with the acting premier. He didn't know what the story was at all. He referred me to the Chief Secretary. The Chief Secretary says they are acting on a decision made by a Cabinet. Niue Telecom, they can't comment either. And you guys are also left in the dark as well because you haven't been formally advised, have you?
No, we haven't been formally advised. So basically, it's still a leftover from last year. There's no resolution. But in one of those meetings, I was told that government has to do a legislation. I have to apply for a license to operate as an ISP, but I won't be granted a license to operate on Nui.
You have been told that you'd need a license, but even if you applied, you wouldn't get it.
That's correct.
So we know that people on Niue rely on their internet access. And as you say, three quarters of the people use your system. So what are they saying? How are they reacting?
They're all up in arms. If you know, there's a general elections for the government in May the 6th of this year. So basically they're calling out on social media, especially voicing their disappointment and calling for changes in government, new people inside. So it's really ridiculous that they're doing these kind of things 8 weeks out of general elections. It's just crazy. You know, no one would dream up such a thing to do right now.
And of course, that's another story that we're going to keep our eyes on as it develops. You are listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. And at the beginning of the program, of course, we were talking about Radio Australia and the ABC and then discontinuing shortwave. You can check out the latest edition of the Spectrum Monitor, where I actually go into the subject with a little bit more detail, especially on the development and expansion of the internet across the Pacific. Now, how would you like to get a copy of the Spectrum Monitor? Well, listen to this. And I think it's Peter Anthony Holder. Peter, are you ready for the ad? All right, here goes.
The Spectrum Monitor is a monthly electronic magazine covering shortwave, amateur radio, scanning, satellites, Wi-Fi, and vintage radio, which is available for any device capable of opening a PDF file. The Spectrum Monitor also covers amateur radio satellites, maritime and military monitoring on shortwave, reviews of receivers, scanners, and software used for shortwave, and more. Annual subscriptions for 12 issues is only $24, with individual monthly issues available for $3 each. If you're already a subscriber, you can renew your subscription by clicking on the Sign Up for 2015 button. MasterCard, Visa, Discover, and PayPal are accepted. For more details, visit our website at www.thespectrummonitor.com.
All right, that's how you can get the Spectrum Monitor. Well, it's now time to turn our attention to propagation, what's been happening, and what we can expect. Here's Glenn Hauser. Glenn?
Keith from IPS in Australia, the global HF propagation forecast through March 4th. Normal at low latitudes. Normal to fair at mid latitudes. Fair to normal at high latitudes. From Space Weather South Africa through March 4th. Magnetic conditions unsettled to active. Shortwave fade-outs unlikely, MUF unstable. From Met Office UK through March 5th, solar activity very low with a 30% chance of C-class flares. March 4th and 5th, a gradual return to quiet or unsettled geomagnetic activity with solar wind speeds returning to nominal levels. From FK Yonda in Prague, the geomagnetic field will be quiet to active on March 3rd to 5th, 16th, 19th, and 20th. Mostly quiet on March 6th and 14th. Quiet on March 7th, 8th, 11th, 12th, and 15th. Quiet to unsettled March 9th, 10th, 13th, 21st, and 22nd. Active to disturbed March 17th and 18th. From Space Weather Canada, the 27-day magnetic activity forecast shows highest DRX nanoteslas in the auroral zone on February 28th, dropping to lowest quiets from March 10th to 14th. But another active peak on March 17th, more so in the polar zone, all quiet in the sub-auroral zone. From SWPC in Boulder, geomagnetic field activity, unsettled to active, March 3rd and 4th, 15th, 17th to 19th, and 21st to 24th. Likely to reach G1 minor geomagnetic storm levels on March 16th, with A and K indices reaching 20 and 5. Lowest A's and K's of 5 and 2 from March 5th to 14th. Solar flux declining from 79 March 4th to 72 on the 6th and 7th, up to a peak of 82 March 20th to 23rd. William Hepburn's VHF-UHF microwave DX maps call for extreme tropospheric ducting along the lower west coast of Mexico through March 5th, between India and Myanmar until March 5th, around Cabo Verde off West Africa, off the west coast of South Africa and Namibia, and some areas between Yemen, Oman, Pakistan and India, all March 6th and 7th. All around the north and west coasts of Western Australia through March 7th, and also South Australia March 4th. And very strong tropospheric ducting along the Texas Gulf Coast the morning of March 7th.
All right, thanks a lot, Glenn. Before we end off, I want to tell you about Patreon. That's Patreon. Now, many of you have been asking what's going to happen to all the Happy Station and Radio Netherlands archives programs that we have. Now, we are going to be posting them there, and there is going to be a small fee. You have to become a patron to be able to access all the programs and other things that we will be uploading. Now, for example, if we do an interview with somebody on this program or a feature, you can get an extended version of it at Patreon. So just go to patreon.com, that's patreon.com, and just do a search for PCJ Radio International, and you'll find all the information there. We'll have more on next week's program. Now, if you want to contact us to let us know what you think of the show, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. That's mnp@pcjmedia.com. And also do a search for us on Facebook, and we can invite you in to the discussion group for the program. So until next week, so long, take care. 73 and 88 to the ladies.